Gordon, thank you again for agreeing to participate. We've asked each of the respondents to start off by talking about how they got to where they are. So why don't you plunge in and we'll see where this takes us.
Well, I suspect you will find that my background may be a little bit different than most of the CIOs who are currently holding positions in higher education. And I'll just start off by saying that nothing was ever planned in my career, for that matter. It's been a series of chance occurrences and I would say luck as much as anything. And I noted in your email earlier that you made a reference to the quote that luck is where preparation meets opportunity. That resonates quite well with me. And I would say to a substantial degree that one makes one's own luck, that by preparing oneself for any opportunity that comes along and then pursuing each opportunity that comes along, one can find oneself in a pretty interesting position over time, hopefully beneficial. But that's really been a characteristic of my career. I grew up in West Virginia and grew up in a college town in Morgantown, West Virginia. My parents were separated and my mother raised all of us kids. And she was an employee at West Virginia University, which gave me an opportunity after high school to attend the university under their Children of University Employees program. Unfortunately, I didn't last long in my first attempt, and after a couple of semesters decided that I needed a little more grounding and entered the, this was during the Vietnam years, I showed up on a draft list and ended up, instead of accepting the draft notice, enlisting in the U.S. Air Force, where I ended up being trained as a computer technician, having never really seen a computer before. In the wisdom of the Air Force and the way that things worked, I just by chance was selected to serve in that kind of position and went through the training that they provided and then spent the next 4 years working my way up from computer operations to programming on a series of mainframe machines in the intelligence field, but doing basic programming tasks at the end of that period of time. Then, after 4 years of enlisted time in the Air Force, I left the Air Force to go back to West Virginia University to complete my degree under the GI Bill. This time around, I went into the computer science program. I had been in the aerospace engineering program previously, and finished up my degree program in 1977, which at the time was something of a down period for computer programming jobs, at least in the area. Pittsburgh was close by, but there weren't a great number of jobs up in that area. At any rate, after several months looking around for work, I ended up back in the Air Force recruiter's office, listening to him tell me that if I went back in as an officer this time, I could be guaranteed a flying position, which is something that I had always wanted to do. So in January of 78, I ended up back in the U.S. Air Force as a second lieutenant with a degree in computer science, which I then subsequently did not use for the next 4 or 5 years of my Air Force career while I played around flying airplanes. Along about that time, however, someone discovered that I had a computer science degree and decided that I could make better use of my time if I were to spend some time translating pilot speak into engineer speak. It was a period of time when the Air Force was beginning to develop and deploy a next generation of fighter aircraft that relied heavily upon software and computing systems on board. And with both a computer science degree and seat time in an aircraft, they felt that I could be of better use to them in that role. So I spent the next 4 years in the, the early 80s, helping to design the next generation of avionics systems for Air Force fighter aircraft and a variety of other systems. So it was at that point that I put my computer science degree back to work and helped develop and work on standards such as the Ada programming language, MIL standard 1588 computer systems, and embedded computing systems in avionics systems. After that, I recognized, as most young officers do, that to advance in the military, you really need an advanced degree in these days. And I made an effort to get into the Air Force Institute of Technology to pursue my advanced degree in computer science. I wasn't immediately selected for that, but I wound up in that process being selected for a position on the AFIT staff, the Air Force Institute of Technology staff, in their computing organization. And it was at that period of time that the institution was pursuing the development of campus-wide networks along with a variety of administrative system upgrades to their computing platforms. And so I served for 4 years as director of computer operations and also the program manager, project manager for the networking program. I had come out of my time in the design of avionics systems with a significant amount of project management expertise, and that was something that I found to be very useful in managing the network project for the Air Force Institute of Technology. After that tour of duty, I went on, completed my master's degree in computer science, and that was at a civilian institution under an Air Force scholarship. Just after I completed that, Desert Storm broke out or occurred. I was at Air Force Logistics Command headquarters, spent a couple of years there, and then was invited back to the Air Force Institute of Technology to serve as the CIO there, which is where I was at the time that I came up on my 20-year point. In my military career, decided that it was best for me to pursue other opportunities. This was in 1994, and it was at a time when Georgia Tech was preparing for the arrival of the Olympic Games and needed someone with a significant technology background, IT background, and program management background to help oversee the projects associated with preparing the technology infrastructure for the Olympic Village during the 96 Games. So I ended up at Georgia Tech first as what was known as the executive director of the Office of Information Technology, and worked on not only the organizational elements of the OIT there, but also put together the program to implement the infrastructure for the village. It was during that time that I guess I was, well, ultimately after a change in leadership at the institution, I was appointed the Associate Vice President for Information Technology and served the next 7.5 years there until I was invited to consider the position at Notre Dame. So I've been here at Notre Dame for just over 4.5 years, coming up on 5 years as CIO here.
You've had such a varied career with institutions that are certainly have some common ground, focus on continuing and higher education and degree programs, but also with quite disparate cultures. What have you taken away from your observations about those cultures that might help people make intelligent career development choices? You did admit in a very self-effacing way that a lot of your career has been accidental, but presumably some insights that you might share might help the next generation coming along to weigh a culture in a military organization versus an engineering institution versus a private Catholic institution.
I think it is very true that one has to be very aware of and sensitive to organizational and institutional culture. And for those in CIO positions and leadership positions of any kind, it's important to understand the political structure, the power structure, the culture, the history of the institution, the traditions of the institution, for a number of reasons. One, so that you can stay in sync with those, but knowing those things will help one understand where resistance to change might occur and might come from. and how to leverage maybe those cultures and those traditions to help institute change. It is quite true that the institutions that I mentioned during my career and that I spent time in during my career were very different culturally. At the end of the day, though, it really all comes down to how one works with other people, because the essence of what we're doing is not technology, it's interacting with people and working with people, joining with people, building consensus with other people that allows us to get anything done, irrespective of the culture. And the culture influences how people behave. And so it's important to understand the culture and the traditions. But ultimately, the skill that's needed at this level, I think, is how to deal with people.
How did you make the switch? In describing your career, obviously the early parts of your career were very technical, very focused, maybe fair to say at the very beginning, very tactical. You ultimately engaged in more strategic projects. When did you begin the migration away from sort of hands-on management and to something broader, and how did you prepare yourself for that?
Well, to be honest, that change occurred when I recognized that for any mission objectives, irrespective of the institution, for any mission objectives to be met, that again, those mission objectives are achieved through people and not necessarily through technology and through things. So focusing on the factors that make people successful and organizations successful and how organizations work, it became clear to me that those were more important in furthering the mission of the institution or the organization than is the technology itself. So my focus shifted from technical to organizational, to process, to procedure, to planning, to working with people to ensure that they had the tools and resources that they needed, and the guidance and the direction that they needed to make the whole organization and institution a success.
Gordon, do you have any kind of personal guidelines that, the golden rule type things that you keep in mind when you're dealing with people? I mean, you know, do you have any certain things that you would tell others that these are the keys that to keep in mind when dealing with people?
Boy, Dave, I'm not sure that I can articulate them other than, first of all, expecting that everyone that I'm dealing with is a professional and dealing with people as professionals and with respect. We presume here at Notre Dame, for example, especially among the leadership team, that we all share common values of respect and trust, and knowing that while we may differ about specifics, we all have the same objectives as shared objectives, and that we're all wanting the same thing in the end, and agreement in advance that irrespective of any specific differences, that we'll work together to try to achieve those objectives. When we do disagree, we agree that we disagree and that we resolve to work things out or to find ways to deal with any of those disagreements. When I'm working with my own employees, I expect them to treat other employees of the university, our customers, our students, our faculty, with the same level of respect that we would ask of each other, and of course that we treat internally each other with respect, and to try to instill a degree of professionalism that sometimes is difficult to get people to recognize and to realize. Especially that's one area in which I think that a career in the military has helped, and that is that the military takes a much more focused and visible effort to build professionalism, especially among the officer corps, the leadership corps, than has traditionally been the case, or the case in my experience in higher education. So it's not that people are coming out of the military are any better or more inherently capable in this regard. It's just that they've been exposed more to situations that test their abilities to work with each other and to work as teams than perhaps that may have been the case in higher education.
Well, let me just then real quickly have a follow-up on that and ask you, have you seen differences in the cultures at institutions or organizations based on, you know, that we're seeing in differences in those areas, excluding the military, but, for example, university cultures and things?
There very clearly are differences in culture from institution to institution. Certainly that was the case. I think, you know, I may have come or may have experience with two institutions that are almost at opposite ends of the cultural spectrum. And, David, I'm sure you've witnessed some of this at Xavier as well.
Absolutely.
Having come from South Carolina. At Georgia Tech, beyond the obvious differences between Georgia Tech and Notre Dame, in that one is focused on science and engineering, the other one is principally humanities, liberal arts-based, one's public, one's private, one's urban, the other is suburban, highly residential versus a commuter population on the one hand. The underlying characteristic of the leadership culture at Georgia Tech is one of a high degree of value placed on the individual entrepreneurism of the faculty, and to some degree, even across the administration, some competition that exists. And recognizing that that competition exists and exploiting that competition for the good of the institution, to further the institutional goals. At Notre Dame is quite different, and a culture here that among the leadership that values to a much higher degree the cohesiveness or the singularism of the institutional vision.
If I go back for a second to an earlier comment that you made about the difference in the approach of the military to creating, developing leaders versus a more ad hoc, perhaps, approach among universities typically. If you were to be able to do something about that when you're through being CIO at Notre Dame and decide that you're going to do something entirely different and you'd like to focus on that, how would you start? What would you incorporate in a leadership program that you think would help develop more effective leaders in university environments?
Well, that's a good question. I think it would be worth first taking a look at the way that the various military organizations approach this. And I know it's not the same from the Air Force to the Army to the Navy in this regard, but leadership training and development of the next generation or the cadre of leaders is a very, as I said, a very deliberate, very visible effort within the Air Force, at least. And there are a series of training regimens that every officer in the military is required to pursue at certain points in that officer's career. Early on in the career, it's focused at very much at the unit level and the tactical, learning how to work together in teams, learning how to follow, learning how to lead, and one cannot become a good leader unless one first knows how to be a good follower, and developing communication skills and interpersonal skills that allow one to be good at working together in teams. Later on in one's career, one is exposed to much more strategic issues and dealing with issues associated with managing large, complex organizations, managing complex resource bases, personnel, material, dollars, for example, and then developing strategies. I know that there's a lot of conversation in higher education today about alignment of institutional IT strategies and agendas with university strategies. There is less visible, to me at least, focus on development of the next generation of IT leaders. So I think that some time could be spent. Certainly we spend some time here at Notre Dame internally in the IT organization in thinking about how to develop our next generation of leaders. I know that things like the Fry Institute exist, as well as other EDUCAUSE-sponsored programs, but it doesn't seem to me that these kinds of programs get as much visibility on our campuses as perhaps they might.
And that's an important issue in career development, the importance of continuing to seize opportunities for professional development, exposure to new ways of thinking, exposure to other people and their perspectives on the problems that we have in common. In that vein, during the course of your career across these different types of organizations, have there been people who stick out in your mind as, whether it was formally declared or not, people that you would think of as mentors?
Well, there have been many, of course, in my military career, some as well, but fewer in number in my career in higher education. I've been very, I guess, blessed with good leadership at both of the institutions that I have been at Georgia Tech. There was the Senior Vice President for Finance and Administration, Bob Thompson, from whom I learned a lot about how to herd cats. In the military, herding cats is less of a challenge because there's such structure and regimentation. But even in the military, of course, there at some level has to be consensus upon things like strategy. So there have been a number of military officers during my career that I saw as mentors as well. I've also been fortunate enough to have been involved with a couple of groups in higher education, the SURA group, Southeastern Universities Research Association, and the participation by a number of senior CIOs in our community from whom I've learned a lot. The EDUCAUSE Security Task Force was another good opportunity to learn from some very capable people. Dan Updegrove comes to mind, who's currently at UT Austin, and people like Greg Jackson at Chicago. I wouldn't necessarily call them so much mentors as contemporaries, but I've learned a lot from each of them in just watching their styles and how they work and particularly interaction with peer groups.
Gordon, how would you describe your own style?
Let's see, with respect to the organization, the IT organization here, and my leadership team, I would like to describe my own style, and someone else will have to be the judge of how well I meet this. But I'd like to describe that style as one of building consensus, but once a decision is made, sticking with the decision and making sure that people are doing their jobs as they are supposed to be doing them. So it's one in which I expect a lot of people, I demand a lot of people, I guess, but it's because I expect each and every one of our staff to act as professionals in every sense of that word. So I hope I display the same kind of professionalism in my own interactions with them as I expect. And that pretty much goes to also to interactions with the leadership team at the university.
Do you feel as though in the context of those relationships, either currently at Notre Dame or in your prior institutions, that there have been relationships where you have been viewed as the mentor of someone who is perhaps junior to you, even again if it was not officially declared to be a mentoring relationship?
Oh, I'm sure that's the case. Yeah, there's no question that that's the case. I know that, you know, I have a number of direct reports, probably totaling around 11 or 12 right now, and some of whom are fairly early in their careers or mid-level in their careers, and I know several of them look to me for that kind of guidance and assistance, and they come to me with questions about their own careers and I know several of them have mentioned to me that they would like to be considered on that quote-unquote CIO track to become a CIO someday.
They're waiting for you to get out of the way, Gordon.
Well, I know that. and I will eventually, sure. So they often come to me for counsel about, you know, how to deal with a specific problem or where they should focus some more of their time or energy in gaining skills that would help them to become more well-rounded. And that's what I advise them, anyone who is considering heading down a CIO track, that CIOs can no longer be considered just technologists. They have to become much more well-rounded than the old IT directors once were. And the key is not only knowing how to run an IT organization, but how to deal with people at the leadership level of the institution and establishing and maintaining relationships. So the answer to that is yes. Again, we don't have a formal mentorship program here, but a lot of informal mentoring goes on. We also have a mid-level managers, a program that focuses on our mid-level managers, because it's my view that the leadership team can all come together and sit around the table and leave in one mind about any issue. But ultimately, the rubber hits the road down at the mid-level managers, and they're the ones who actually get all of the work done in our organization, who direct the work of the rank-and-file employees and whose mind share we have to get anything done. And so we're spending a fair amount of time now working at that level to help educate them about the broad nature of the IT business at a complex research university, what the values are that we're trying to instill in all the staff and with regard to our interactions with others across the university, and then what skills they need to succeed in what has become their chosen profession.
In the course of pointing people toward those kinds of programs, either at Notre Dame or programs through EDUCAUSE or challenging somebody to put their name forward for consideration for the Fry Institute or supporting somebody's thoughts about getting an advanced degree, are there things that you incorporate or suggest to people that they might read, whether those things are periodicals or monographs or testimonials or leadership books or websites, any resources of that sort that you tend to point people toward?
Well, I tend to stay away from the management theory du jour because a lot of these things come and go, and I do think, though, there's some key fundamental truth to a lot of these, and again, I get back to the relationships issue and dealing with people. I do think that Robert Maxwell has some very interesting and provocative thoughts about how to get the best out of people and how to be leaders. And so I found that many of Maxwell's writings resonate well with me.
You've emphasized, obviously, that relationships are at the core and that there are some fundamental characteristics associated with leadership that you feel are fairly stable concepts over time. They stand the test of time. As you look ahead to the next generation, when you're mentoring someone who is perhaps in her mid-30s, who allows that she might like to be a CIO in 10, 15, or 20 years, do you foresee fundamental shifts in what will be expected of CIOs over those next 20 years? The CIO job isn't quite the same as it was 20 years ago, and presumably it'll continue to evolve in the coming 20 years. Do you see anything in your crystal ball that you would point aspiring CIOs to be aware of?
Well, I think that the role of the CIO, and again, the role of the CIO is fairly fresh and fairly new, especially at a lot of institutions. I know that prior to my arrival here, there was not a CIO position, and I think, in fact, since we've just had a leadership change at the institution, a new provost, a new president, and a fairly new executive vice president, none of whom have had a lot of exposure at other institutions or their other jobs to the role of CIO, there are a lot of institutions who may or may not have a CIO position, and those who don't have a CIO position are still going to be looking for this role of the chief integrator. And I think the CIO role is becoming one of the chief integrator. And by that I mean that as we see the emergence of more tightly coupled and more highly integrated application systems and underlying technology infrastructures, and the sharing of data between systems of all different types on campus, we're going to see the role of the IT organization and the CIO specifically becoming one of working with the leadership of the institution to find ways to integrate across multiple business functions and the underlying technology applications supporting those business functions. We've experienced here on our own campus through our ERP implementation, it's much more than an ERP implementation, but we've experienced that we have, through this experience, have come to a place where our individual business units have begun to work much more closely together and are recognizing not only that there are other dependent business processes that exist on campus, but are recognizing now ways to leverage across multiple processes to become more efficient or more effective at the institution. So the CIO's role is, I think, at least in part, becoming one of stimulating the conversations that create the structures and the conversations that lead to opportunities to improve across the institution. And to integrate those opportunities across multiple business units in the organization and to leverage improvements. That will require interpersonal skills, both interpersonal skills and a recognition by institutional leadership that there is such a role to be played, especially if the institution hopes to or wants to truly leverage the technology to provide institution with some competitive advantage. And I know that's maybe a vague notion, but to be more specific, at an institution like Notre Dame and most private institutions, we rely very heavily on maintaining relationships with constituents, both internal and external constituents. And the technologies that we're implementing now through our ERP systems and our identity management systems are, at their very core, constituent relationship management systems. And over time, we're going to be deploying capabilities associated with these systems that will allow us to better manage the relationships with those constituents that we find important at our institutions, either with prospective students, with current students, with graduates and alums, with parents of students, with benefactors, with the casual fan of the football program, and finding ways to integrate all of this data across all of these applications and to use that information ultimately strategically to benefit the institution, whether that's in raising additional funds or whether that's in delivering education at the right time, at the right place. All of those things are feasible, but it will take a lot of investment in terms of the CIO's time to, first of all, make the leadership understand that these things are achievable, and then ultimately to execute upon that promise.
Gordon, let me ask you a quick question. If you could point to one or two personal qualities or characteristics that you thought were critical for an effective CIO to have, what would they be? And maybe on the same line, what do you look for in developing leaders that you think are critical and worth making your investment in?
Okay, let's take the first question first. I think the critical thing is the ability to make a decision and stick to it. I think one of the things that is death to an organization, irrespective of whether it's IT or any other organization, is for the leadership to waffle and to be unclear about about a decision or to continuously change one's mind. So the ability to make a decision and stick to it. Now, that doesn't mean that if a decision turns out to be a bad decision or an erroneous decision that one can't change one's mind. But if that is done, it should be done in a very visible way and for very good reasons, and that the subsequent decision is the final decision. We had a number of instances here prior to my arrival in which every time someone new showed up at the door of the leadership, the decision changed, and it created a situation in which the staff, the employees, could never count on a decision being final. And that turned out to be really damaging to the organization. The other qualities, I guess, are, you know, the more common ones of integrity and building respect and trust. So I think those are probably the ones that I would key on. And as far as advising junior employees or even my own leadership team, I look for people who have, certainly technical skills are important, but they're not the most important skills. The most important skills are more attitudinal skills rather than aptitude. Technical skills can be taught. Sometimes attitude can't be. And when you find someone who has both the technical skills, the aptitude, as well as the attitude, then you better latch on to that person and hold on to them.
Let me go back just real quickly to the first thing you said when you were talking about making a decision and sticking to it. Someone asked me once in a seminar I was teaching, what do you think is the single most important characteristic of a leader? And I said courage. It sounds almost like you're talking about, in that respect, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you might be talking about also having the courage of your convictions.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Courage of your convictions, well, it's more than that. It's being a leader and being firm in your convictions, courage in your convictions. I think that's a good way of saying it. Again, not that one should not consider changing one's mind in the face of evidence that it was a bad decision or a wrong decision, but certainly admitting to the fact that it was a bad decision and then sticking with the consequences or living with the consequences of that is certainly, I think, very important. Absolutely.
Gordon, I think our tape is near to running out. Give you one last opportunity now that a few minutes have passed to toss anything else into the conversation that you feel might be useful to people who will listen to this, who may be hoping to learn a little bit more about developing their own careers. Any last thoughts?
Well, again, I would just reemphasize that we all need to pay attention to the personal relationships that we create, that we establish, and this business that we're in is all about people. It's not about the technology. It's about people, and it's those relationships with people that are most important.
Well, very good. We certainly, in that vein, thank you for being willing to contribute back to the profession. I think you've been very generous with your time and your comments.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I hope it's useful.
It has been a true pleasure. Thanks very much.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.